This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Dirt and Sprague back with more here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. If you want to feel, you want something to make you feel a little weird, a year ago today.
1 year ago today.
The Blazers tipped off the regular season last year.
Yeah. Yeah. 1 year ago today, the NBA season was beginning.
We're what, a week and a half from when the NBA season just ended? Yeah, it's so weird.
Should have been a great example, too, of the year, or at least the regular season that was to come, because that ended there. How many home openers had they won in a row?
Oh, that's right. Like they had a
19,
great streak.
They had one of the longest streaks in the history of the NBA. They always won that game. 2 years ago, they blew out LeBron in L.A. in that opener. So that ended their streak, and that should have been an example of what was to come.
We'll get to some Russell Wilson stuff here in just a second. I've got a musical question for the music man, Andy Johnson.
Okay, fire away.
We'll get to that, and then we got the college football schedule and crunch time. So it is a loaded second hour. No Kevin Todd. Program note, no Kevin Todd today. He gave me his picks.
Okay, we'll write them down.
But his wife and him are in New York, doing the New York thing.
We're going to New York.
And I got his pick, so he won't make an appearance, but we got him. We'll read him to you. And then Matt Chazanow will join us at 2 o'clock. There's a really good piece by Joe Fan with two N's.
Okay.
He covers the Seattle Seahawks for NBC Sports. And he wrote an article about Antonio Brown getting another chance. Some call it the second chance. And he highlights it's what's technically not his second chance.
No, what are we on, number four at this point?
This would be his fourth if he gets signed. And the Seahawks are the team brought up so much because that report came out. And whether that was leaked by the Seahawks or the agent of Antonio Brown, to me, it's kind of a moot point. Pete Carroll did an interview and said, we're kicking around all kinds of ideas.
Sure.
He did not deny it. And I wanted to get into this. Russell Wilson is a pretty big defender of this move. He mentioned it in the offseason. Mm-hmm. He says, quote, the reality about Antonio is he's one of the best players to ever play this game. He's always been a special player on the field, and he's long vouched for getting him in Seattle and putting him on the field with him. But the pushback is interesting. Both of us follow very similar people in Seattle media. And when they do these polls or they talk about this on their Twitter accounts, it's largely filled with people saying no. And I'm more curious why, because if it's a character thing, really, Seahawks fan? Are you really the person to be caring about character? You guys drafted Frank Clark.
And welcomed him with open arms, and not much of an issue there for a few seasons.
No, that didn't seem to bother anybody. In fact, we were up at their camp 2 years in a row, and both times I was up there, everybody running up to Frank Clark with their kid. They want autographs. They're telling him he's great. They love him. And I'm just thinking, did you read the police report to that story?
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. There's a reason he fell in the draft.
What is the disconnect here between the quarterback they all trust wanting this guy, the team kind of acknowledging they'd be open to it, but the fans, not all of them, but a lot of them saying, no thanks.
I will say this in defense of Seahawks fam, we are all hypocritical as fans. We will pick and choose the hills that we want to die on, the times that we want to get upset about a player's behavior. Nobody has a perfect track record of that, and we're all willing to overlook things as long as it leads to winning football games for our team. The Frank Clark thing we always thought was interesting because that was one of the more damning police reports that I had ever read from his time in college. And that just never really became an issue in Seattle, and he was beloved by the fans. He was beloved by the media. On his credit, he stayed out of trouble, but people were willing to turn a blind eye because he came in, was a really good pass rusher for him and a really good part of that defensive line. I think for this, if I'm putting my you know, feet in the shoes of a Seahawk fan, I think the argument would be, obviously, the guy has character issues, and you don't want any part of that when you can choose whether or not you want to bring a guy in. The other aspect of it, it's at a position that you don't really feel like you need. You know, if this was a defensive lineman...
you could argue they do, though, Dirt, because their defense might not get much better than it is. So you're going to need as many weapons to score as possible.
And I agree with that. We talked about it the other day. That was my argument. Yeah. You might as well add more pieces because you're going to have to score 40 a game likely to win. I think, though, if this was an elite defensive lineman that was dealing with some of the similar issues as Antonio Brown has off the field, I don't think you would get the same pushback. There would be we need a pass rusher. Nobody can get after the quarterback, and we need some help on defense. So let's go ahead and make the signing. I think you're trying to weigh the cost benefit of, is the juice worth the squeeze here? Is it worth the headache to bring Antonio Brown in a position where you have one of the best young wide receivers in the NFL in DK Metcalf, who's turned himself into a top 10 wide receiver in the league, and a couple of underrated guys and more and Lockett. So I think that's the argument for Seahawks fan, but you're right in terms of, looking at how fans have reacted to it, because we did a poll question on it. It was overwhelmingly no, don't bring him in. I remember when we talked about this the other day, Seahawks fan was texting in saying, no, don't do it. And I've seen multiple poll questions from folks up in Seattle, and it's been pretty overwhelming of them saying, no, it's not worth it. Don't bring him in as a wide receiver.
I thought this was an interesting part of Joe Fan's article. Russell Wilson said on Antonio, quote, "The reality is that Antonio has had some tough moments in his life, especially as of late. He's gone through a lot of things that he wishes he could take back and not do or say whatever it may be, but I think he's a special player for sure. I've developed a relationship with him personally. Not everybody is perfect. That's the reality. None of us are. Hopefully he gets to play football again," to which Fan writes, "But it is interesting how Wilson worded his comments. He phrases tough moments like Brown was suddenly stricken with cancer, right, or like he's been bit by the injury bug. All of this mess is of Brown's own doing.
Yes.
Nobody's perfect is a convenient way to sweep everything under the rug as well.
Assaulting a delivery truck driver, a moving truck driver, whatever it was, the accusations of sexual assault, the videos that took place of him shouting with his wife, with his kids present. Like, this is not just, hey, the guy went out and got drunk and, you know, public intoxication or something. This isn't Baker Mayfield running from a police officer in college. These are large issues.
Yeah, the balance of you trust your quarterback to help your team win every week, and there's no doubt the fan base does. I mean, I think he's the best quarterback in the NFL. You might think that too, but if you don't, he's one, two, or three, depending on who you talk to. I don't know why, but I just find that an interesting, we trust this dude and he's telling you, I want him on the field with me. And it's an immediate, no, not him. And I just, in football, largely football, more so than the other sports, I don't believe that fan bases have true morality. I don't think that exists. And as you mentioned, every fan base of almost any sport will go through something where they get tested and they go, well, not a big deal. Well,
but if your rival does it, or if another team
does
it,
it's the biggest deal
in
the
world.
You're
the first one to criticize him for doing it.
And again, it's not like Seattle hasn't brought in a questionable player or two.
Sure, it's happened over the years. The funny thing about it too is that for all the Seahawks fan that are against it, if they make this signing and Antonio Brown clicks and puts up big numbers, you're not going to see a lot of pushback as the year goes on. Now, I don't want to compare the two because what they've done off the field is nowhere near, and not even in the same ballpark. But I remember when the Blazers signed Carmelo Anthony, and you and I were like, hey, you know, what the hell, man? You got nothing to lose. Dame's a good leader. I don't know how much of the locker room stuff in New York or Oklahoma City or Houston are accurate. Take a flyer. What the hell do you got to lose? Melo's going to be a Blazer. And there was so many Blazer fans that said, don't do this. It's not worth it. He's going to kill the culture. This is going to be a terrible signing. How do Blazer fans feel about Carmelo Anthony by the end of the season? Right, even Will used to shout at us from the mountaintops every single day about how bad Carmelo Anthony was.
And then
was.
He would text us because right? He couldn't come in the office
He couldn't
anymore.
Come into the office because of quarantine. But by the end of the year and him knocking down clutch threes in the bubble, it was, all right, well, this Melo, this has worked well. So I think there's
some people want him back next year.
Exactly. That was the sentiment at the end of the season. So again, I'm not comparing what Antonio Brown and Carmelo Anthony have been through because they're not even anywhere near similar stories. But I just, in terms of a disgruntled fan base saying, why are we bringing this guy in? As soon as Melo performed, all the detractors said, all right, well, this signing worked. And the same thing will happen with Antonio Brown.
You know, I feel like in sports too, Dirt, there's an element of you kind of have to take chances. And whether you like a person or not, I mean, I don't know Antonio Brown personally. I don't like the stories and the things he's been attached to. And I've said this before. I wish the NFL was more strict on blackballing people. Boy, they work real quick to do it to Colin Kaepernick. Sure. But sure. Antonio Brown might get another fourth chance.
Right.
But that being said, it doesn't exist. So I have to move past that. Teams take chances. Sometimes they work out. Sometimes they don't. I would equate this to Portland, back to the Blazers, not just with Melo. A guy that I followed, Dan Morang, he was going on a back and forth and somebody was suggesting no way would you trade CJ for Paul George. And my thought was, well, why would you not? Paul George is 6'8", can handle the rock, and he's an all-NBA player. CJ's not accomplished that.
He's better than CJ.
And you might just like CJ because CJ's, you know, fallen in love with the city. He's done great things in the community, and that's all well and good. But the idea that you shouldn't take chances on guys, you know, when you establish who your franchise is and it turns out to be consistent and good and the quality's great and leadership's perfect, I don't know why you don't take more chances or trust said leader. You know, we said this with DeMarcus Cousins years ago.
We did.
When Boogie, before the injuries, and he was a king and he was miserable and it wasn't going well, we made it abundantly clear on this show, why would you not? And everybody wrote articles. He's a culture killer.
Right,
this is not
Sacramento.
The culture. No. You know who the culture is? It's not Neil O'Shea. The culture is Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Whatever Dame is or who Dame is, that's the culture. Russell Wilson, same thing. Your culture is your franchise player. And if you trust the franchise player, take some chances. And if it doesn't work, here's the beauty. You can cut him.
Yeah, you get rid
He's
of him
after a week or
two. He's on a
veteran minimum contract if Seattle were to sign him.
Right.
And just as quick as he was there, be just like New England. He's out a week later.
Well, you know, I mentioned it the other day, and I still believe it. If this move ends up happening for Seattle, it will be a huge test on the leadership abilities of Russell Wilson, because this notion that Antonio Brown's learned his lesson and he's going to be fine moving forward, I can't even tell you how many times I've read that story, and that was the case last year when he was going to New England. This was the opportunity he wanted. Tom Brady, remember, was very adamant, similar to Russell Wilson, about going out and adding him because he knew he needed another weapon in that offense. This was going to be the move that finally turned it all around for Antonio Brown, and he lasted a week and a half with the organization that almost everybody can last a long time with and guys have turned their careers around with. So it'll be a big test with Russell Wilson. I also, you totally get why he wants him. And again, these examples are different than guys like Boogie or Melo. Because
that sounds
was,
like they're actually friends, though. I'll
sure.
give him at least that. He sounds
sure.
like he's a friend.
He spent some time with him. Yeah. But also put yourself in Russell Wilson's shoes, man. That guy wants to win. He wants to get back to a Super Bowl. We just talked in the first hour of the show about how he hasn't been able to get over that hump and get back to an NFC title game in a couple of years. Remember last year? What cost them that game in Green Bay? A dropped pass late in the game. And if that pass is caught, Seattle,
if that's Antonio Brown and not Malik
right,
Turner.
They probably go on to win that game. And then who knows what the hell happens in the NFC title game.
Because San Francisco didn't like
exactly,
facing Russell Wilson.
He beat him in San Francisco, and then they came down to the one-inch yard line in the final week of the season. So this is a quarterback that wants to win. He knows his legacy's on the line. He wants to get back over the hump. He understands he's got great talent on the outside. And he's thinking of this. Sure, they have a relationship. Maybe behind the scenes Antonio Brown has changed. I'm not going to believe any of that nonsense because I've heard it before, but this is a quarterback that's looking at saying, man, you give me DK Metcalf on one side and Antonio Brown on the other side with a good tight end, a good running back, and good slot receivers to mix with it. Nobody is going to stop this offense. And you just saw Kansas City, a team very similarly offensively to what Seattle does, say, we got all these weapons. What did Kansas City just do? They added another weapon, a guy that's been disgruntled, a guy that's been in trouble at times, a guy that has been in and out of the favor of the teams that he's played with. Kansas City said, what the hell, man? Bring him in, add another weapon. And I think Russell Wilson's trying to make the same argument.
Should be noted, Jamal Adams, it just was announced, he is out against the Arizona Cardinals. He would not make his return from the injury list. And Mike Upati is questionable with a back injury. And Michael Thomas is also out for the New Orleans Saints. So Emmanuel Sanders and Michael Thomas. Holler if you got the Panthers at plus 7.5, baby.
He took them yesterday in the Pro Football Challenge.
Let's go. All right. We'll get to some college football. But coming up next, I have a musical question for the man who calls himself Music Man Andy.
Okay.
And we'll do that next on The Fan. We'll get to the college football schedule for the weekend. We got some ranked matchups. Interesting games.
Got some NBA news today I'm kind of excited to get into
NBA
as well.
NBA news, we get to that. We got crunch time around the corner. Matt Chazanow covers, the play-by-play voice for Washington State football. He'll hop on with us today at 2, get a season preview. Are the Cougs going to be surprisingly good?
I feel like we've done this like a couple of years now where we just expect them to be terrible because they're replacing a quarterback. No chance they're going to make noise, and then they end up having a good season.
We'll see if Rolovich can keep it rolling. Did you like that? And we'll talk with Matt Chazanow. We'll Sprague the Line at 2:30, so get those Spragging the Line sponsors in at 503-250-1080. I meant to get to this yesterday, and I just blanked on it. It was in the top of my show notes.
Okay.
You're Music Man Andy.
Is that what they call me?
Yeah, that's what they call you in the mean streets.
Look, we have great bumper music on this show. You're welcome.
We do, and I don't contribute to that at all. So anytime you have a compliment or a question about the music, it is always Andy Dirt Johnson related.
I get very offended when people text in crediting the producer for the bumper music. Very offended by that.
I've never taken credit for that. I always tell people.
Listeners will text in and be like, hey, Swag's playing great music today. I'm like, hey, whoa.
I think that's a primetime thing.
You just assume because Mike does the
Does the death metal and the primetime. But you're the music guy.
Sure.
You took one music course in college.
I did. Yeah, history of rock and roll, man. I know everything about it now. Ask me anything.
Okay. Well, I have a question about rock and roll to you.
Oh, okay. Probably not going to get it.
Miley Cyrus did an interview recently, and she says that she is working on a cover album of all Metallica songs.
Oh.
And this is upsetting some people, and other people are getting pretty damn excited for it.
Why would it upset people?
Well,
just because it's Miley Cyrus?
It's Metallica, which is an iconic rock band.
I actually think there's a lot of great examples of cross-genre covers that happen.
I'm with you. I actually I wish more artists would cover each other. I think it's weird that, like, if I go to a concert and I see fill-in-the-blank musical artist, I'd love for them to spend 2 songs covering their favorite songs from other bands or musicians.
Yeah, I love it when musicians do
Billy Joel often did this. He'd do a Springsteen song or a Beatles song or something in a concert.
Everybody knows it. They like the song. Fans like to sing
along. Yeah, because he talks about, you know, who influenced him or whatever. And yeah.
It's an homage. It's respect. Yeah. And, you know, I'm actually, as good as the song is by whoever originally did it, I'm always interested in hearing it done in a different way, a different sound. Like, I love covers. I'm a big fan of them. And I thought this was cool. I think Miley Cyrus is a bit of an underrated musical artist. I don't think she gets her just due.
I don't listen to a lot of Miley Cyrus, but
When she was a coach on The Voice, and you're just in rehearsals and they're working with their contestants, but then they are just singing and it's just raw.
Yeah.
Like in the studio while they're working
next
on stuff.
The piano or something.
And you're like, oh, okay, she can sing.
She can really sing.
She's got a good voice.
She's got a different sound, too, because she's got kind of that southern twang accent with her mouth.
Yeah.
I thought this was kind of cool news, but I checked the Reddit, and
not good, huh?
There's not a lot of people excited on the Reddit stream, but I could be wrong. Maybe more people are actually excited than not.
I think one of the better
examples.
What does
Music Man Andy say?
Well, first off, I love cross-genre covers. I think they're awesome. They're fun. If you want a really lighthearted song to listen to, pull up The Gourds singing Gin and Juice. Phenomenal combination of like bluegrass twang guy singing Gin and Juice and just listening to the lyrics. It just makes you laugh your ass off, and it's a really lighthearted song. I love people, though, that are willing to push the boundaries of music. One of my favorite bands out there is the Zac Brown Band. And some people don't like country. I don't really think they're not a traditional country band in any way, shape, or form. But one of their more recent albums, they came out with it, and there was a few of their traditional kind of drinky, islandy country songs. They did 2 or 3 songs on the album that sounded like they were Metallica. They did 2 or 3 songs on the album that sounded like they were Tony Bennett. And it was just such a cool combination. And Dave Grohl, was the guy that I think was the producer or directed, whatever the term is in music. He was the one that was behind it. And they just like doing different kinds of songs and different kind of genres. They're traditionally a country group, but they mix it up. And I like people that are willing to push the boundaries on it. And I think a prime example of this also is an album that was one of my favorites of the last handful of years, is when Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga did a joint album.
That was a good album.
That if I just said that on surface, you would say, the rah, 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 like that, mixing in with Tony Bennett. What the hell are we doing here? It was a great album, and they're both tremendous artists for various different reasons, mm-hmm. but I love people that are willing to dabble in what
that's
their different
the
genres.
Best part of watching the Grammys, since they kind of reformat, took it away from an award show and made it more of a musical
concert,
and so you just put two random artists from different genres together and
mesh it up. Let's go.
Yeah, and so and then you find out, okay, who's just ridiculously talented.
Yeah,
their voice is unbelievable, no matter what. You know, I remember a few years back, Carrie Underwood did like a jazz standard thing with somebody, and you're like, oh my god, she's
got a good voice.
She can sing,
right?
So
you know, people take a dump on movies for like doing the remakes, right? Like, why are we getting this movie again? We don't need it. I think music doesn't do it enough. And I wouldn't want all the musicians to just, all their new albums are just covers. But the musical artists that I listen to, you, Swag, anybody, I think it would be great if every musical artist or band, if they dedicated just doing 12 songs, 12 of their favorite songs and doing cover renditions of them. I think that would be fantastic content. Mm.
Yeah, James Taylor's one of my favorite artists of all time, and he had an album within the last handful of years that I want to say was like 20 songs that he put out, and it was all covers. It was, and none of them were real household kind of song. It was just music that he loved listening to that was kind of under the radar, off the beaten path, if you will. And he went and recorded all of them again, and there's a lot of them were songs that I had never heard before, but it was just a full album of covers. I'm with you. I think there's an untapped area there, and I think this is the case of mutual respect with music. There's musicians that love each other. There was just a story that came out the other day. I'd have to pull it back up to remember the specific details, but it was basically like Jimi Hendrix was playing with the Beatles, and they had just released one of their albums, and it had been out for a couple of days, and Jimi Hendrix loved it, and he listened to the entire thing all the way through, and then he was jamming with the Beatles, and he could like play the entire thing.
Mm.
And they were blown away with, one, his musical ability, but he loved and appreciated the album so much that he was like playing it for them, and it was just this like awesome music moment. I'm with you. Like, the movie thing is overdone because they're made for money. I think in the genre of music, it's more about respect and paying homage to a song that had an impact on your life.
Well, I don't view stories. I think they can do different renditions of certain movies.
Well, Ocean's 11 was a remake. I mean, the Rat Pack that did it way back in the day.
Right, and you know, that's a little different for me just because it was the Rat Pack. It was so many years ago when then they redid it with Clooney and Pitt and et cetera.
Now, I'm talking about like Transformers 35.
Are you talking about like true remakes, like the Karate Kid with Will Smith's son versus Ralph Macchio?
And while there might be a spot for those kind of movies, I think there's just so many storylines that I don't care to see reinterpreted. You know what I mean? I don't want to see different actors and then it's a similar storyline, but you mix it up this way or that way. I don't feel that way about music, and I do with movies. I don't want to see... Don't take, what was the one they just did with, oh my God, I'm blanking. Shia LaBeouf, it was a couple years ago, and Michael Douglas.
I know what you're talking about.
Wall Street?
Wall Street.
Yeah, the Wall Street movie. When instead of Sheen, they put Shia LaBeouf and they just redo it. And I was kind of like,
Are they doing that one again?
I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
I want an original idea with movies. With music, I think there's so many great artists and good music that I'd love to hear how other artists, how they feel about that. And I feel like you can get an idea by how they perform and sing it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And on this note, like to come back full circle, I agree with both of you. I think Miley Cyrus is a tremendous musical talent. I don't listen to a lot of her stuff. It's just not, I'm not a real poppy kind of person, but she clearly has a lot of talent. And I love Metallica, and I listen to Metallica pretty regularly. So to get that combination, tickle me intrigued, man. I'm going to check this out when she comes out with it.
So Miley Cyrus does an interview, and she's a huge Metallica fan. She's gotten a video out there where she does different renditions of them paying tribute at concerts. You can find those on YouTube. But she announced she is making a tribute album to Metallica. She didn't release what song she's going to be doing.
Okay.
But she is currently working on that, and I wanted to bring that to Music Man Andy.
I'm intrigued, man.
All right, coming up next, college football this weekend. Is it a decent slate? Are you paying attention yet? Are you still waiting for the Pac-12? Let us know at the Fan Text Line. We'll dive into some college football next on The Fan.
Well, Rob Manfred can't get out of his own way. I want to get to that coming up in a bit. Some NBA news that I don't know if it surprised you guys, but surprised me a little bit. So we get to those. A lot of good thoughts coming in on the music stuff that you mentioned.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, different remake. Somebody said Disturbed did the cover of Sound of Silence.
Mm.
That was good. Johnny Cash is Hurt got texted in. That's a great cover.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, you want redone music? You got to listen to rap. A lot of rap.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way a lot of the beats are made. You just go get old samples from great funk songs or blues or jazz songs from the, you know, back in the day, and you find a way to repurpose some, and it is an underappreciated part of rap in my mind.
I had a friend that he loves rap, and I remember being with him when he realized how repurposed most of the instrumentals in rap are from older songs.
I love finding the original songs of classic rap songs.
Yeah, because you hear snippets, and you're like, I feel like I might know that. Maybe I don't. And then you hear the original, and you go, ha, ha, ha. I hear it now.
That's what it is. Before we get to anything else, so let's get to the college football slate. We talked briefly yesterday. The Big Ten. Ooh, oh, yeah.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. The Big Ten is back, and they are back tonight. Are we going to watch at 5 o'clock on the Big Ten Network, Illinois and Wisconsin?
I am not going to watch this, but
I watch the World Series instead.
The Fighting Illini at plus 20.
It's a 20-point spread.
And it's a redshirt freshman quarterback starting for the Badgers because Jack Cohn is injured. Their offensive line is all back for Wisconsin, so take with that what you will.
Jack Cohn's back, huh?
Jack Cohn, yeah. He's got one more year. He's injured.
One more year. Oh,
he's
out. Yeah. I didn't know if he was gone after last year. I didn't do I haven't dug into the returning starters of Wisconsin
yet. New running back, Jonathan Taylor, obviously gone. Yes. He's in Indianapolis.
And
Lovie Smith bringing back his offensive line as well. I kind of like the Illini to hang in this game to at least cover a 20-point spread.
Let's go, Illini. I saw a fun stat. The last time Ohio State lost to a ranked – last time Ohio State was in the top five and they lost to an unranked team at home was
– Virginia Tech?
2007 against Illinois.
Oh.
Juice Williams and Rashard Mendenhall.
Oh, yes.
Remember that team?
They went to the Rose Bowl.
They did, and they got boat raced by USC. But
yeah.
Connecting to teams that are playing this weekend.
I loved Juice Williams.
He was fun to watch, man. Illinois had some good teams back in the day. Elsewhere this weekend, you get a couple of ranked matchups. Does NC State North Carolina do it at all for you? That's a 9 a.m. game on ESPN.
It doesn't really do much for me,
okay.
Although I will say North Carolina's showing last weekend was just pitiful.
Losing to Florida State.
I mean, it's not even that you came back and made it respectable. It's that you got clobbered the way you did. That Florida State team isn't that great, or at least they weren't going into that. Took them for granted, and it was a humbling experience for a team that got into the top five ranking. I don't know how closely I'm going to watch it, but I'll follow to see if they can take care of business against the Wolfpack.
They're still number 14 in the country.
Well, there's nobody else to rank.
They didn't slip
That'll
too far.
Change after the Big Ten gets cranked
after
up. You get some ups. Like if Illinois upsets Wisconsin, they'll hop into the rankings.
And Wisconsin won't drop out of it.
They'll drop down to 20, you know, right around 19-20.
North Carolina, NC State. The other ranked matchups, we got Iowa State, Oklahoma State. It's a 12:30 game.
I'm really interested in that game.
Oklahoma State's the only undefeated team left in the Big 12. And Iowa State, remember they lost that opener at home in their non-conference slate.
It was
that
Arkansas State,
Arkansas State, that sounds about
Sun
right.
Sun Belt, Fun Belt.
They've now won three straight and are undefeated in Big 12 play. So this is a big seeding game for the Big 12. And if Oklahoma State loses, you basically eliminate the Big 12 from the college football play. If Oklahoma State is all the way up to number six in the country.
Well, and Brock Purdy's looked pretty good. Good.
I see what you did there.
He liked the dud joke. Look, Iowa State, give him credit for responding. You kind of looked at that loss and said, oh, might not go well for them for the Cyclones. They've responded with three in a row. I don't know how legit they are as a 17th-ranked team. But you're going to T-Boone Pickens Stadium against Oklahoma State, who's undefeated.
T-Boone.
Very big spot for Mike Gundy and the OANN Network. We'll see if they can capitalize, although I wouldn't be stunned if they lost this game. This is very Mike Gundy to lose this one.
Yeah, probably would. Elsewhere, 4:30, Michigan and Minnesota. We talked about that one yesterday. As the Big Ten begins, that game is on ABC at 4:30. And there is a chance.
Yeah.
There's a chance it could snow.
I'm looking forward to that. It has been snowing in Minneapolis. My cousin's been shooting me pictures.
Oh, snow football!
They're returning their quarterback, and they got their wide receiver to opt back in.
Minnesota, that is.
And Minnesota's a home dog.
Three-point dog.
This is a real usual letdown spot for Harbaugh and company, although most of the pickers out there like Michigan. What is this? What does it do to Harbaugh to lose the first game of the year to Minnesota?
Not ideal, Bob. Not ideal.
I think it would be annoying from our angle because it'd be all day, every day talk about Jim Harbaugh.
Sure, it would start right away.
But you cannot deny, as a sports observer, boy, oh boy, the heat getting turned up more and more on old Jimbo in Ann Arbor if you can't beat Minnesota.
Guy to keep an eye on that game is Joe Milton. That is the new starting quarterback for Michigan. He's a junior. From Pahokee, Florida. He's 6'5", 243. Big dude. Sounds like he's got a big arm, can run around a lot.
Well, can he find a quarterback? I mean, he's been there for, what is this, his fifth year?
I want to say something like that, yeah.
Year five for Harbaugh. He has yet to identify a truly great quarterback. He brought in Shea Patterson thinking he was going to do something.
That's held his program back. They've had talent on defense. They've had talent in skill positions. He hasn't been able to find that difference maker there. I've read a couple of the pieces that say people think he could be that guy for Michigan, but
we'll see.
We'll see how he does tomorrow, that game. And then the last ranked game that we're all excited for, I know everybody's going to set their DVR for it, record it, probably watch it a couple of times. That's Cincinnati and SMU.
Don't you downplay the fickle bunch.
Cincinnati and
the
SMU.
Fighting fickles.
For those who aren't paying attention, because
SMU's paying people again?
they probably. Isn't it Sonny Dykes? Isn't he at SMU right
now?
Yes. He's at SMU. For those who haven't paid attention, because we did have a listener say that, college football started? It has. Cincinnati's the number 9 team in the country. So that's where we're at this year.
Which kind of, I think, tells you again, you have two conferences not playing right now. So people are being kind of weird with their rankings.
Yeah.
Let me ask you. Do you feel like a vast majority of people out here are following or watching, or do you think people are largely punting on it because we know they're not playing other conferences? We know they're probably missing the playoff. Like, I'm still not getting I care about college football vibe.
I'm not either.
From a lot of our audience or sports fans that I know in my
life.
I've
punted on it. I've watched very little. Like, Saturday's like, okay, do I have things to do?
I've kind of viewed Saturday that way too, like golf or get chores done because Sunday is all football.
And then
right?
Obviously with the Dodgers and the Major League playoffs, it's like, okay, when are they playing? Right. That's when I'm in front of my television, and then we'll see what else interest me.
And has there been a more fraudulent team in college football history than Notre Dame always being ranked in the top five?
No, I don't think so. They're there every year, aren't they? Everybody talks about Notre Dame. There's a bit of a Dallas Cowboys vibe to them, is there not? I've been that way with college football all year. I'm trying to get more involved in it because I know obviously that the Pac-12 is returning and we're 2 weeks away from everybody out here on the West Coast playing, and we're going to be a part of this crazy season. So I'm going to continue to get more and more invested as the weeks go on. I have kind of punted on most of the season, and I think largely you've missed out on a handful of things. One, you haven't had household non-conference matchups that we love about college football. You didn't get any of those. So the conferences that played non-conference games early, they were all against terrible programs that nobody wanted to watch, and the Big 12 still couldn't win any of those. And then outside of that, I mean, how many compelling conference games have you had? Alabama, Georgia, sure, you had A&M in Florida. There's been a couple in the SEC, but Oklahoma and Texas, by the time they played, I mean, that was a fun game, but both of them had lost by that time, so it wasn't like it was two undefeated teams vying for a playoff spot. You just watched it because it was Oklahoma and Texas, and Gus Johnson was screaming on your television. And I think the same thing is true this weekend. Maybe some of these games surprise, but as we're running through, Iowa State and Oklahoma, probably the best game of the weekend. Maybe Michigan, Minnesota.
What about Oklahoma, TCU? Oklahoma wins.
Yeah, no, I'm out on Oklahoma. They're two lost teams.
They're not making the playoffs.
Sure, maybe they end up winning the Big 12. I can see that. But I think that's the main interest for me. The only other question I had about the college football weekend is what should the line be against Syracuse, between Clemson and Syracuse?
So can I tell you, it's 46 right now.
46. Clemson's favored by 46 at home against a conference opponent.
They beat Georgia Tech last weekend.
Was it 73-7, I think?
It was 73-7. Their first half line is 28. And
first half line is four touchdowns.
It's four touchdowns. All of the sharps and big money are in on Clemson covering that 46-point spread. Syracuse got that bad that quick?
That is unbelievable.
I haven't followed Syracuse. Dino Babers?
Yeah, to be...
What happened there?
What was that, 6.5 touchdown? 6.5 touchdown underdog? Are you kidding me? That's a conference opponent. You're not playing the Citadel.
Dude, six. That's damn near seven.
It's almost seven
touchdowns. It's 46.
It's a field goal shy of seven touchdown spread. So I wonder, like, shouldn't it be high, especially beating Georgia Tech 73-7 last week? Why is that only a 46-point spread?
Can we be honest? I think I'm taking Clemson minus the 46.
If I laid money on that game, I'd take Clemson in a heartbeat. I would also take the other quote-unquote big game of the weekend is Nebraska-Ohio State just because of the names of the program. Ohio State's going to boat race them.
Ooh, this is interesting. A lot of people like Nebraska to cover that spread. Sharps, some of the national writers, I've seen them pick games. They're picking Nebraska to lose that game by 20, not 26-27.
Do they think Ohio State's going to call off the dogs late?
They think Nebraska's offense is legit, gave them problems in 2018. They think they can maybe duplicate it. That's all I'm reading, but I'm not going in on that game. I'm just relaying the information.
They did get, yeah, I'm pulling it up. They lost 36-31 at Ohio State in 2018. I like how we used a game from 2 years ago with completely different rosters. They lost 48-7 at home last year to Ohio State. So that covers a 26-point spread. Yeah, I don't know. I would lay the money on Ohio State. I think that is a team that is with a singular focus, and you're not going to get any letdown performances from the Buckeyes this year. They occasionally have those and had them under Urban Meyer. You'd lose a game to, like, Purdue or something. You'd be like, what the hell happened, man? I don't see that happening with Ohio State this weekend.
So have we learned about ourselves that we largely only care about college football when we know our teams are playing?
Yeah, I said that yesterday. That would be, if you had a full Pac-12 slate this weekend, it was an early game, afternoon game, late game, that would be the main stuff on my television.
I think it is for me, too.
I'm a biased Pac-12 fan, obviously. Sure. It doesn't mean that you're a better conference than the other ones out there. But, yeah, I follow it far more closely than the national college football slate.
Well, and I've followed it the last couple of weeks. Some games more than others. But I have been surprised with myself. Like, I thought I loved college football. And I still think I do when the Pac-12's playing. Largely as a sport, though, without the conference, I don't know how much I really care.
This doesn't feel complete. And then I think of all the sports that have been hurt by the lack of an atmosphere, college football's up there for me. I can overcome the NFL because it's such a good product. I can overcome some of the other pro sports because it's just you're watching greatness. College football, I think, is really reliant on bands, on student sections, on the chants, the wideouts at Penn State. That kind of stuff is what I love about college football, and you just don't have it this year, which is unfortunate. All right, let's get to a couple of notes. Rob Manfred can't get out of his own way. I want to get to that. Also, the NBA coming out with some news today that caught me a little off guard. How would we think it would work next season? We'll get to those crunch time next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton Aloha Division, Vancouver. They are all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of the locations today. I was not at the Glorious House of Gaines this morning.
Come on.
That is 7-9.
You know what, Jeff?
Come on.
I can't walk today, all right? What do you want from me?
Stretch it out and suck it up, Buttercup.
Can't walk, man. I got a round of golf tomorrow. I got to be loose and limber on the course. Take it easy on me, would you?
What's the weather tomorrow? Just cold?
I think it's going to be a little chilly, man. Got to get my hand warmers out, get my pants on.
Yeah, I think 2 or 3 o'clock is when we get to the high temperature around like 52 or 53.
Yeah, I lit my first fire last night.
We turned our heater on this morning.
Yeah, to turn the furnace on.
It was cold, man.
Yeah, I was freezing when I got home yesterday.
I got this big winter jacket I'm wearing. Like, man, I can't go out with a light jacket or a t-shirt anymore.
We're here, baby. We are here. Why is Rob Manfred an idiot?
I think because he has no connection to the game of baseball and he's largely just been a lawyer.
Yeah, he's been, I think he's...
You don't have a connection to the game. It's hard to interpret the game.
He's been in boardrooms and union negotiations and those sorts of things, I think, for far too long.
He's a labor lawyer, for God's sakes.
So we talked the other day about him wanting the expanded playoff and the runner on second and extra innings rules to stick around, which is like, whatever. Some people don't like it, some do. I don't think you're going to get a lot of anger from it. People will make some noise initially, but you'll get used to it. It was also reported earlier this week that they don't believe the designated hitter is going to stick in the National League, at least in the short term because they don't think the Players Association would vote for it, or they got to get approval from the players, whatever. But the people are expecting that to go back to being just American League for the designated hitter. Well, he was doing a national interview today and was just talking about the future of the game and all this stuff. And the topic of shifts was brought up in baseball. And he said that he is for limiting shifts in the future. He said a lot of...
Hold on, let me read the quote.
He said, a lot of people feel that the extreme shifting that you're talking about has changed the game in ways that are not positive, and it remains a really hot topic in terms of conversation within that committee. I take it that you were both against this move.
No, it's a reaction to the shift in approach to hitting. And so if baseball is no longer going to coach situational hitting, using the whole field, contact hitting, if it's all about launch angle, swinging as hard as you can, exit velocity, and hitting home runs, then you have to give defenses the opportunity to respond to that. If hitters are not going to take advantage of an entire side of the infield that's wide open, that's right. On them.
And drop a bunt down. You get on first every time.
Where do we draw the line here?
Yeah, that's the
question.
Hey, he
doesn't like the pitch inside. All right, no pitches inside. All got to be out over the plate.
Yeah, you can only throw strikes.
That's the same thing to me. And look, I'm pretty open-minded with the way sports wants to progress or change. But I said this in the NBA. I hated that we reacted so quickly to DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard being hack-a-shacked that they were like, oh my God, they can't make free throws. And then people freaked out, and the narrative became the game is unwatchable, to which I'd be like, DeAndre Jordan shot 7 free throws. Can we calm down?
Right. That makes it unwatchable.
And you get a reaction. It's no different. You get the shift. And look, my favorite team, I think everybody's favorite team, has players that you just see that shift, and it's a ginormous one. Freddie Freeman has in the entire infield is all on the right side of the field because he's a lefty.
He's a lefty hitter.
And so you see that, and when he hits into it, you're like, damn it. But that's part of the strategy of baseball. If we're going to do that, again, I think you're getting into the mud, and I don't think you need to get in the mud because it's not hurting your game to have the shift. It should make other players and adapt. These hitters adapt and work on that ability. I don't understand that, and I think you're actually setting up the future worse, because if you're doing it Major League Baseball, when do the college coaches bitch? When do the minor league coaches bitch? And when do the high school coaches start bitching? And then all of a sudden high school kids don't learn to hit opposite field. That used to be something we practiced. Now you're basically saying we don't need to because you're going to eliminate the shift. I don't like it. Stop getting in the
mud.
And if
you want games to be shorter, sorry, if you're not allowing the defense to... If the game is going to analytics and they have all this data and says, here's where the guy hits it when he hits it on the ground, and they're not supposed to do anything with it.
Right, you're not allowed to move and go defend that.
Now you're going to have 15, 12 games with, you know, teams getting 20 hits because the defense can't move over to where they know the guy's going to hit it to.
Right.
Can I ask you this?
It's like in the NBA, you get the scouting report. This guy can only score if he goes to his right, and you're not allowed to defend him to make him go to his left.
No kidding.
Right.
There's no difference there. You're taking away his strength and making him beat you with his weakness.
So let me ask you, and I may have asked this in the past when the topic has kind of been brought up here and there over the last few years. Mm-hmm. Where is this coming from? Where's the push coming from for him to even mention this, to have a committee discussing this? Like, who is this stemming from? The players? Is it stemming from the managers?
No,
is this a media creation?
It's an overreaction, I think, to a vocal minority of fans that say they don't like watching guys hit ground balls to the right side with 6 infielders over there. Like that, and I've heard that from people have tweeted me about this before, saying it's dumb, you shouldn't be able to do it. You're overlooking a number of different factors. One, the shift has been around a long time. Go look at pictures of Ted Williams at bats in the 1940s, man. People used to swing to the right side of the infield because he was a left-handed pole hitter, and he would occasionally hit one to the left side of the infield. Right, like you find ways around it. I've watched a lot of guys in baseball. Defenses used to shift.
It looks no different.
New creation. They've been doing this forever. And again, it goes to Swag's point. Like, if you have the metrics behind it that says 90% of the time this guy hits a ground ball, you know, right up the middle, what are you going to do? You're going to put a defender right behind second base so you can get him out. Like, you're just supposed to ignore information? I hate this kind of stuff, and I think you've seen it in the NBA. Like, the traditional big man in the NBA is a bit of a dinosaur at this point. But we're not making rules to make their life easier. We're telling them if you want to remain a part of the NBA, you have to adapt. You have to be able to run the floor. You have to be able to knock down a 15 to 18 footer. Just being a guy that can grab rebounds and play defense, sure, maybe there's some roles here and there, but you're not going to be a starting, you know, center that's going to play 35 minutes a night. You have to adapt to where the game is going. And in baseball, defenses are smart. They know where to line guys up. As a Giants fan, they do this to Brandon Belt all the time. And I would say probably once a week, he'll come out, and he's a power hitter that actually had a good year this year. Once a week, he'll come out, drop a bunt down the third baseline, and beat it out every single time.
Well, it's brilliant.
Just to keep them honest, and maybe they, you know, leak back over a little bit the next time that he comes up, and you got to respect it. I don't like taking away the pressure on the hitter of saying, man, if you can't get a hit, that's on you, buddy. You got to find a way to adapt. That's what sports is all about.
The funny thing, too, Dirt, is how many times do you watch a baseball game now? Like, I remember watching as a kid, and let's take the Renteria hit in the Marlins against Cleveland.
Yeah.
In game 7, you take that moment. He hits it right up the middle. Usually when it goes just to the right or left of the pitcher, straight up the middle, your first thought is, oh my God, he got a single.
That's a base hit.
And in 97, it works perfectly. It's straight up the middle. They can't reach it. It's just out of the arms of Omar Vizquel. Well, now when that happens, I'm not as quick to go, oh, it's a single.
Right,
because
right.
Now you got the shortstop or the second baseman shifted directly behind the bag.
He's going to grab that ball.
Because the analytics say that blank percentage of the time when he hits it up the middle and you can shift over and play those odds. This happened in the Braves-Dodgers series. I would see a hit up the middle from LA or Atlanta.
Let's go.
And I'd be like, Or like the Dodgers hit it, I go, Albies has got to be there. And Albies is standing right behind second base. They've eliminated the obvious, which is kind of exciting because when you put a ball in play now, you're still kind of wondering how much of the shift is there.
Right.
I hate this so much. Fans that complain about it, I mean, do you complain about basketball teams not playing a guy taller than 6'10 in a starting lineup? Like
when Dame gets double teamed, should we take that away because he's good? Are we not allowed to double team him?
You know, like what do you complain about in the other sports? I don't understand the frustrations with the shift. These hitters should be adapting. And to the Brandon Belt example, lay a butt down on the opposite line. Nobody's over there.
Yeah, you can get an easy base hit all the time. The last note on this, too, I think when you shift, there is a strategy that goes into it. You have to pitch to the shift. And I don't know, there's probably studies that have been done, but we focus all the time on the hits that the shift has taken away. And I haven't seen a lot of research on the hits that the shift has added. And there's a lot of times that pitchers will get pissed because there's somebody playing out of position and you hit a ground ball where traditionally the shortstop is supposed to be, but there's nobody there and it turns into a base hit. So it can create hits as well. I don't like this. I don't like tinkering. You want the DH kind of stuff, whatever, the expanded playoff, whatever, runner on second and then 13th inning, whatever. But taking away the shift, I think, is too far. But Rob Manfred says he's thinking about it and they're discussing it within the rules committee. Major League Baseball. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Alloa Division, Vancouver. They are all up and running. Go check them out. Crunch.com. Stop by one of the locations today. They got great deals going on, as always, in the month of October. Coming up in the final hour, we will spray the line. Get your fake sponsors in, 503-250-1080. Didn't get to the NBA note there. I do want to dive into that because it's a take on next season that I wasn't quite expecting. So we'll get to that coming up. Game 3 of the World Series with a little bit more on the weekend slate in football. Let's start, though, with our continuing preview of the Pac-12. Matt Chazanow, he's the voice of Washington State football. What are the Cougs going to be like this year? We'll get a Coug preview in to start the final hour next on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.